Welcome to Simmer Down with Brenda Anderson and Libby Summers, the podcast that's about food, style, and whatever is on their minds. And you are going to love it.
Hey, I'm Brenda Anderson, and I am here with Libby Summers, Virginia Willis, and Virginia Willis's lovely mother, Virginia. And we're sitting here at B. Matthews having breakfast. It's the Savannah Book Festival, so these ladies are here to educate everybody in Savannah about what they do. So, Libby, if she can quit eating for a minute, she's going to say hey.
Hey, Brenda. I'm having two eggs over easy with bacon.
And of course she's having bacon.
And a drop biscuit. Kind of surprised me.
Oh, nice. Oh, is a drop biscuit good?
It's delicious.
B. Matthews has a pretty nice breakfast menu, and they allowed us to sit in the corner and do this podcast. So, okay, so we have Virginia here, and we're so excited. Because Libby introduced me to her. I love her books. Bon Appetit, Y'all was the first one, huge success, and the second one that hasn't been out that long.
When did it come out?
It came out in September, late September of 2011.
Brilliant.
Basic to brilliant,
and I love it. And I've saved this question, although we've been sitting here a while, to ask Virginia and her mother why they have such beautiful skin. Because I grew up in the South, too, and that didn't fall on me.
You guys do have
great skin. I mean, I don't even understand it. I just keep looking at y'all. It's crazy.
I can't claim any credit. I only can claim genetics.
So I mean, I don't know what it's amazing. I'm going to go get a lift or something when I leave here. So we told Virginia we were going to have 10 questions for her.
10 questions.
And I think I'll start with the first one. How do you teach somebody hospitality? Wow. I mean the real meaning of being hospitable.
These are deep. My questions aren't nearly this deep.
Well, thank y'all for having me, first of all. So there's that. I think that the thing about being hospitable is it's the ultimate golden rule. How do you want to be treated? So if you walk into a place and you're hot, wouldn't you like to be asked if you'd like a glass of water or a glass of tea or something like that? I think it's essentially the golden rule, treating others how you would like to be treated. And then there's a graciousness to it. There's a comfort to it. That once someone's in it and starting and having fun with it and enjoying it, then that just could grow.
It does, and there's nothing, you're right, more comforting than being around somebody who knows the true meaning of hospitality. Mm-hmm. And
Brenda, you're very hospitable.
Do you think?
I know.
I try.
Uh-huh. As soon as you walk into Brenda's house, it's, what can I get for you? What do you need? Da, da, da. Can I get you a drink?
Yeah, and
can I get you a drink? Actually.
Well, that's Savannah.
What are you drinking? Yeah. Can I get you a drink?
Can I get you a drink?
I guess.
And
so,
I don't mean tea.
There have been podcasts where we did, treat ourselves to
the very first
something
podcast
special.
We did. We got liquor, and I don't drink.
I couldn't drive.
Brenda couldn't drive when we were done with the podcast.
I only drink wine typically, and we had margaritas.
So is that why this is a breakfast podcast?
Yes,
it keeps us sober.
Yeah.
It makes us be serious. Okay. This is a question Libby and I talked about on our Christmas podcast. Do you like other people to be in the kitchen with you when you're cooking?
That I have mixed opinions about. Yes. The first answer is yes.
To do the dishes.
If y'all didn't hear that, Virginia's mother just said to do the dishes. I love that. And yes.
No, I love being in the kitchen together. I mean, I grew up being in the kitchen with Mama and my grandmother and cooking and people working together. And then I think like at parties and when people get together, people always, it's a magnet to go to the kitchen.
Whether you want them to or not.
There's that part. So there, sometimes there's the level of helping or just being in the way. But I love people to come, and that's why it's often handy. Like, well, people have an island. So the folks that are cooking, and the folks that are just socializing are socializing.
But then you can keep your zone safe.
Yes.
If there's an island to separate
everybody. When I lived in New York, we had an open area with a dining room, and I literally put a sofa in the kitchen so people would just hang out on the sofa while I cook.
I love that.
Love it.
Then they're not in your way.
Exactly. Because dinner has to get cooked.
I find it hard to concentrate. So if somebody's in the kitchen with me, or if we're getting ready to have a party and I've got some last minute things to do, I'll get totally off track. And all of a sudden everything's 30 minutes late. Because I'm trying to entertain.
Right.
And then that makes it hard. But Libby finds it hard.
Yeah, very difficult. I have the next question. Are you ready, Virginia?
Mm-hmm. I'm scared.
If you were to compare your lipstick to a certain food, what would it be? The shade of lipstick.
I have something in mind already.
Well, it's a blue red. I don't know. It's not strawberry.
It's kind of raspberry-ish.
Raspberry or cherry, like that blue cherry, like a Bing.
Yes.
Almost like a Bing cherry, maybe. How about that?
Like the inside of a Bing cherry.
If you cut the Bing cherry.
Inside of the Bing cherry. That's perfect.
Yes. I love it.
It's a perfect shade for you. The reason why I say it, when you meet Virginia, you always have this wonderful lipstick, which makes your eyes pop. Like, you know all this. Let's not pretend we know.
No. I feel naked sometimes if I don't have lipstick.
I might need some right now. I do reapply lipstick often, but I just read about all this. They were talking about it on the show, lead found in lipstick.
Oh, no, we can't hear about that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, what does one do? Am I going to just get a beet and start smearing it on my lips? I mean, you've got to wear lipstick.
One of my favorite things recently, I had a shoot, but anyway, I was out on the lake and I couldn't find my lipstick, and I realized a day later I couldn't find it. I didn't have a backup. I had left it in my tackle box. So I thought that pretty much described me perfectly. I left my Chanel lipstick in my tackle box.
I love that.
So it is Chanel. What is the actual...
This one is Rue de Rivoli. But they changed my lipstick a couple years ago, and it sort of sent me into a tailspin. But, life is about change.
I wish I had a picture of your lipstick in your tackle box.
Well, Virginia's mother, reading about her, she seemed to like to experiment in the kitchen, too. So very courageous in the kitchen.
Okay.
So I think that's great.
Well, Mama cooks things all the time, and she has this incredible recipe for pound cake. That was my grandmother's recipe for pound cake. And it's this awesome pound cake, and every now and then she'll try a different pound cake. Like one time she tried a 7-Up pound cake, and I was like, why?
Like the soda 7-Up?
Yeah.
That's funny.
I was like, why? Why? I put the kibosh on that. Like, I'm all about experimentation, but when you have basically the world's most perfect pound cake recipe.
I was looking at that last night. I'm going to try it.
What's in it? What makes it perfect?
It's half Crisco and half butter.
Like
how can you go wrong?
It's like a good pie crust. Yeah. Half lard, but not Crisco. But
yeah. My mother made a good pound cake, and when I was reading what Virginia had to say in that particular cookbook, my son also wanted that pound cake for a birthday cake. Like 3 years in a row, he wanted pound cake. It was kind of nice. Question.
Virginia, are you ready for my next question?
It's probably going to have nothing to do with food.
When you're feeling blue, what do you cook for yourself?
I have to say I go straight for a good steak and spinach and red wine. I don't know if that's blue or PMS.
I love it. And her mother knew immediately. Her mother said steak.
So red meat. You don't eat red meat very often? Because you seem like a happy person.
Yeah. No. I actually don't eat it that often. I don't eat it that often. But if there's like a... Either that...
What's the spinach for?
It tastes good.
Okay.
It makes you happy.
Yeah.
It
makes you happy.
No, I mean, I'm serious. That's like a little meal. Like if I'm kind of like a treat. It's a treat.
Like how much red wine is involved with said meal?
A fair amount.
So it probably has more to do with the wine than the steak.
That's 750 milliliter glass.
Brenda, Virginia's blue meal might be very similar to your blue meal.
I'm kind of thinking it might be. I think it might be. I want to ask Libby this, and I haven't, so both of y'all can answer this question.
Ooh.
What recipe... either in or out of your books, that are not worth the trouble? Like you get a new recipe, you try it, and you go, that wasn't worth the trouble. I've done that. Do you have one?
Virginia, you're first.
Not in my book.
It's not going to be in my book.
No, I mean...
Do you have one in Libby's book that's not worth the trouble?
No.
No, it's not worth
the trip. No bus throw in here.
No.
There's definitely not one in my book.
No.
There's no doubt about that. There's a whole process I go through to make sure. I feel like I have an obligation because this recipe's in my book, so someone like you doesn't get home and be like, why did she put that in her book? This wasn't worth the trouble.
Thank you, because I've done that.
I mean, there is one brilliant in the last book that is, it was intentional and it's almost comical, but it's like my grandmother's chicken and rice, which is basically chicken and rice and chicken stock. And I think my grandmother probably even used water, so because she made the stock with the chicken. But it's like chicken and rice. It's like comfort food.
Mm-hmm.
When you're sick and when you're, you know, comfort food. And then the brilliant, I've somehow managed to turn it into, it's the Queen's rice, Riz à la Rienne. And it's this full-on French madness involving multiple pots. You cook the rice and you puree the rice, and you cook the chicken and you puree the chicken, and then you mix the two, and then there's a liaison of egg yolk involved, and it winds up
tired already.
It is, but in the paragraph, I tell you, I know it's another pot. Don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. Like, I kind of, like...
You prepare the reader.
And I make fun of myself for making this really simple thing super complicated. So it was intentional. I don't know that everyone will see my humor on it. But the truth of the matter is that the end result, it is. It's like the most amazing chicken and rice you've ever had.
Okay, I'm going to do that.
It's
this
like
weekend.
Liquid gold. It's just like this amazing thing. Of course, your dishes are, your kitchen's a bedlam. And it's a bit.
And that's when you want somebody else in your kitchen, right?
So, but Libby, do you know of anything? I mean, you wouldn't put that in your recipe cookbook.
No, definitely not. And my cookbook, I mean, they're all very approachable recipes. I'm not trained like you are, Virginia. And I mean, there's a couple stretches, which I think you have to have in your book. But no, I was just thinking, I'm obsessed with rabbit right now.
Oh, yeah.
Virginia.
She's wearing a rabbit ring, by the way.
I love that. And I was working on a cassoulet recipe, and it just is another reason to do it the right way. Like, I confit the rabbit first, and I couldn't imagine, like, putting beans in that... I didn't cook the beans myself,
right?
Because
like
just,
a can, you mean? You wouldn't use a can?
No, yeah. No.
You'd soak them.
Of course, and it's worth the trouble. I don't know of anything. It would be some silly recipe that might involve 7-Up or something that would not be worth the trouble.
I did a recipe out of I don't know if I should say the name.
Say it.
Because it's, I would love the cookbook. Okay, and I love the restaurant, Balthazar.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a recipe out of that cookbook that took me the entire day. And in the end of the day, it's just okay. And I thought, I've spent all day long
on this.
However,
see, but that's a restaurant recipe. And that recipe was what created out of a restaurant that has sous chefs and prep cooks and dishwashers and all those things.
There you go.
So, and like a lot of restaurant recipes are multi-components. Like, so the sauce is one whole project. And the main part is one whole project.
The stock is one whole project.
The garnish is one whole project.
And the stock, I'm glad you said that. So, I never even thought of it like that.
So that's like, you know, working through someone like Thomas Keller's books, like his cookbooks, that's like, it's an all-day project. That's like
right.
A four-day project. But that's when you have like 75 people working in the kitchen. You know, so that's like the heads up.
Okay, that makes sense now. I never even thought about that. However, I did do their pork belly recipe for a party I had for Libby, and it was excellent.
Delicious.
It was a great recipe. We love Balthazar.
What I found it interesting, though, that she didn't do the pork belly recipe for my book.
But can I say why? I didn't have that book.
Oh, really?
Remember? That was the day the book came out, and I refused to look at the book ahead of time. Because I'd worked on the book with Libby, and it was so much fun, but I didn't want to see the end result, even though Libby had a copy at her house, until the day it came out, because I wanted my book from Libby the day it came out. It was just a sentimental thing.
We had release party in Savannah. It was ridiculous, like 400 people.
No, I know. I wanted to come. I couldn't come.
But the better party was at Brenda's house with everybody that had worked on the book. So, like, how many people? 13?
Yep, 13 people.
Like, it was just this intimate champagne toasting, like, we did this.
There were tears.
Lots of tears.
Of course. Making a book is a big project.
Question.
Okay. Let's turn this conversation to spirits. If you were, let's say, out with your girlfriends, what type of spirit might you order from the bartender?
And
what would you eat with it?
Oh, well, first of all, I don't often drink spirits, whiskey, for example, with food. I might have a cocktail before dinner, and the cocktail would depend on the time of the year, but in the fall or winter, I would generally have bourbon.
What's your favorite bourbon?
Oh, no, I don't have a favorite bourbon exactly, although Pappy Van Winkle.
I was going to say, it's only $75 a shot.
Pappy has a special place, but I guess my sort of house bourbon would be Maker's Mark, but I like Bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And Blanton's and Booker's, and I love Knob Creek.
That's his fave.
The Gentleman Jack. I mean, you know, they all have their place in the world.
They're all dark and warm.
I love
and
that Virginia's mother just keeps nodding too. Oh, those are that one's good. That one's
now,
good.
She, okay. She is that not. She doesn't drink. Mama doesn't drink.
Oh, she's nodding about Virginia. Yeah,
she
drinks that.
She drinks that.
Now,
yes,
okay, if it's summertime, what cocktail do you want?
I usually drink vodka in the summertime. I usually like a vodka martini, or it depends. Actually, in the summer, I would be more inclined to drink wine. What's your favorite drink? You don't drink usually.
I Brenda knows this. I'm kind of a tactile drinker. I continue to order drinks when I'm out because I like the fresh ice and the clinking against the glass and the way it's in my hand. And if I finish one,
it's a miracle.
I might be lucky. I love a great mojito. I love a dark and stormy. I love a really good margarita that Josh Summers, my husband, makes the best.
Then why didn't he make margaritas when we recorded our first podcast?
I think we asked him.
We had some kind
of
mix.
We asked
him to leave.
Oh, we
did it. Oh, bless his heart. Oh, yeah, and there was that.
Yeah.
Poor guy. He gets the shakes now when I go into the house.
Yeah.
Wondering that if I'm ever going to leave. Okay, Virginia's lived in so many different places and studied cooking in so many different places. I have to know what your favorite city is for food.
Paris. Paris, 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 Paris.
Really?
Hands down. Well, Paris is the city of food. I mean, it's not just the city of lights. The value that the French in general and Parisians have on food and the importance of food and the fact that you go to the cheesemonger and the cheesemonger asks, are you having the cheese for lunch or are you having it for dinner? And he will sell you an appropriately aged piece.
So the people who are selling a product know exactly when it should be eaten, how it should be eaten, what it should be eaten with.
Well, I'm not saying that every last store and every last cheesemonger, but if you go into certain stores, I mean, and it's certainly far more prevalent than in the U.S., just a good cheese shop. You know, the cheese is a lot, and the cheese is going to continue to ripen. And the cheesemonger will literally ask you, do you want it for lunch, or is it going to be 4 hours later when you're going to enjoy it for dinner?
So thoughtful.
Oh, my
God.
So,
it's like really caring about the food. And then some produce shops will be the same way. Are the figs for lunch or the figs for dinner? And just the fact that they can ask that question, you know, and then the prêt-à-porter, the to-go foods, basically what you find at a French truck stop or what you find at, you know, a gourmet place here.
Really?
Just the emphasis on the ingredients and the quality of the ingredients. I mean, yes, there's been some Americanization of things and McDonald's and all of that, but there still is this huge importance on fresh and local. Organic, biologique is not that big of a word because a lot of the produce already is. The European Union and France and Great Britain, they're all really ahead of us on farm to table, on eating local, on eating
seasonal. Because
they've
always done that.
Yes.
Okay.
They've always done that and they didn't lose their way.
We used to do that too.
We just got a little lost. So, but I think that hands down, Paris is my favorite food city.
If you could go anywhere in Paris and order something to eat, what would you order?
Ooh la la.
How she just said it.
I don't know. I didn't mean to do that.
Smooth.
Really?
That's such a question.
It just came out.
First place you land in Paris, you're getting in a cab, you're going where? You're saying Charles de Gaulle's in the real
Oh my God, there's so many choices. I can't even focus. One of my favorite places to go is Ma Bourgogne, which is a little corner, a little restaurant on the Place de Vosges. And it's Burgundian food. And see, I lived and worked in Burgundy for several years. And so their wine is from that region. So it's not necessarily a typical Parisian place. It's just simple bistro food. And not terribly expensive, and grumpy, mean waiters with white tablecloths. Mm-hmm. It's as bad as French as you can possibly get. But that's one of my. That's always one of the places I go almost every time I'm in Paris.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Do you have another question? We've got two more we can ask.
I've got my last question for Virginia, and it's basically I'm fascinated to know what you're working on next.
Oh, I'm so excited about all the different things I'm working on right now. I have a. One of the things that I'm trying to do is I want to expand what I do with my writing, because I love to cook, but I love to write, and I realize that I really love to write almost as much as I love to cook. So I have a project that I'm working on now where I'm basically the editor. It's not going to be my voice. The subject is not Southern food. It's American food, but they need a developmental edit. So I'm sort of switching some of my skills to offer services for that for other people. And then in terms of a personal, I'll start working on another y'all book.
Good.
So those take 2 years. That's a big 2-year book. It takes a year to write it, and then basically 6 months to edit it, and then 6 months to publish it. So that's a big project. I am working on a single subject book for a university press.
What's the subject, can you say?
Okra.
Oh, I love that.
I'm so excited, I can't stand it.
I love that.
And I'm such a geek that the fact that I'm getting to write for a university press makes me super happy.
I think that is awesome.
And then lastly, there's a project with Will Harris, who is a friend of mine and a fifth generation cattle rancher in Southwest Georgia. And we're just beginning the process of a narrative with recipes, so it won't be a cookbook. So it'll be my first non-cookbook book. And I'm just the very beginning stages of working on the proposal for that.
Love that.
So that's the writing part. Still fishing for TV possibilities and just having a great time, really.
If I can interject here, how many cookbooks do you have? What do you own? How many do you own?
Oh, do I own? maybe like 1,000.
I don't have that many, but between the two of us, we've got a lot of cookbooks.
Yeah.
There are very few that I like to read. I love to read the recipes, of course,
right,
and look at the pictures, but the anecdotal stories, the wonderful narrative that kind of threads through them, yours is one that I love to read. Like, I loved both of your books reading them.
Thank you.
And if people don't know that about you, they need to buy your book. Even if they're not a cook, they need to buy your book at least to read it.
You almost want to go recipe to recipe just to read the beginning.
Yeah.
And then instead of reading that recipe, you want to go to the next one so you can read more about Virginia and her family.
Yeah, you paint this wonderful picture. It's very, I can see it all in my head.
Me too.
Yeah. Which is so nice. And I've had the pleasure of hearing you read personally, which is always very moving.
I love the story of picking peaches and the gnats and the mosquitoes and the peach fuzz. And I was scratching.
Were you hot? Did that make you hot?
Well, it makes
me
hot.
She gets hot a lot.
yes, I did. Yeah, it did. And my husband used to go to Lane.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Every week to pick up peaches for his store until he finally convinced them to deliver to him. But he would go every week to pick up peaches, and he would just comment. I mean, Middle Georgia is hot.
Middle Georgia is hot.
It is ridiculous hot. And I could see y'all out. I mean, I could, reading that part about the peaches, I could see y'all out there, the bugs and the peach fuzz, and you're sweaty and everything's sticking to you.
13, and nothing could have been worse for a 13-year-old than be picking peaches in Middle Georgia.
Oh.
Because Mama said so. No. I mean, now I appreciate it, but at the time, not so much.
Not so much. But you appreciated what came from it.
Yes. Yes.
Now, the Will Harris thing, is he the... Did the Southern Foodways Alliance. Did Joe York do a video with him? I loved that video.
Yes, he's it's Wydeck. His company is Wydeck Pastures, but he's a fascinating man, and he's just been inducted into fellowship for Southern Farmers and Artisans by SFA, and he's this fifth generation rancher from Southwest Georgia. And if you were to look at him, he's got his truck and his dog and his hat and his boots. And if people were to look, and he's handsome, he's very easy on the eyes, and he's got this awesome, awesome voice. But if people were to look at him, they would automatically make these assumptions, or people could make these automatic assumptions. He's a Southwest Georgia farmer. That means he thinks this. But guess what? He doesn't. And that's one of the wonderful things about him, and I think that's one of the wonderful things about the South, is that people think that the South is all X, and just a big whitewash of certain things, and make these assumptions that aren't always correct. So Will has testified at the UN for food safety. He's spoken in front of Congress campaigning to better our food ways. He's working, he has pastured poultry. His thing is, Virginia chickens are meant to peck and scratch. Cows are meant to chew. And that, in a nutshell, because guess what? Most of the chicken that we eat in this country, they don't get to peck and scratch.
Yeah.
So he's,
oh, I would love
he's
to meet
come
him.
Full circle. Like, his ancestors were natural farming, and then he and his dad got educated, and then he started implementing all these practices that made for basically commodity farming. He's a fascinating character, and I can't wait to sort of sink my teeth in that and write about him, and pray and hope that I have the words to tell his story.
What was the name of his ranch again?
White Oak Pastures.
White Oak Pastures.
We should go.
Yeah, you should go.
Question to wrap it all up, Brenda.
Oh, wait, I have two. Okay.
Do it.
But I'll do the last one, and I stole this question from the Actors Studio, which I love to watch. If you could not do this profession that you do, and that includes writing and cooking, what would you choose?
Great question.
Virginia's thinking.
I think I would teach. I don't know what I would teach. I was a history major in school, so I love history and the arts and humanities. So I have two thoughts that come to mind. One might be a teacher. My grandmother always said that I should be a teacher when I was majored in history. She's like, you should be a teacher. And Mimi, I don't want to be a teacher. I don't want to be a teacher. Well, one of my favorite things to do in the profession that I do now is to teach cooking classes. Like, I love that. So there's that part. I love being able to express what I know about food and cooking to people, and to see that light bulb go off when someone gets it. I don't know what I could teach.
History, of course.
Yeah, history. But seeing that, but my thing with with food, though, honestly, is that everything we do, food, politics, religion, literature, everything has to do with what you put in your mouth. Everything in our world has to do with what you put in your mouth. You vote 3 times a day with what you put in your mouth. All of it goes back to that. So the anthropological approach is where I go, and that's what I would do in terms of teaching, I think, too.
What would you do, Libby Summers?
I could be a pop star.
I thought you were.
Oh, yeah. Okay, second. No, I'm sick that I do not play an instrument. Like, I would love to be a professional musician. And it's not too late. It's not too late to pick up an instrument.
It's not too late. There are plenty of instruments in my house. Come and learn whatever you want.
How about you, Brenda? What would you do?
Oh, I'm doing it. My past life was totally something else.
So you're living your dream.
I am. I was in the hotel business for 16 years and decided it was making me old fast. So
that would, hospitality can do that.
Yeah, and I loved it. But I got to do things I never thought I'd get to do through that. But then I had the pleasure of meeting Libby in an antique store, and everything changed.
God, I just got a shiver.
That's so awesome.
That's so sweet.
That's exactly what happened too.
That's so awesome. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's exactly what happened.
Well, Virginia, thank you for having breakfast
thank
with
you for
us.
Having
it is my pleasure to meet both of y'all. I was kind of nervous and excited. Well, thank you so much.
Well, awesome. Well, thank y'all for having me. It's been fun talking to you and fun having breakfast. So it was a beautiful place.
Cheers. And thank y'all so much. Now these two ladies are going to go and mom to educate the world in Savannah. Thank you.
Bye. Simmer down. Bye.